Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Today's show is sponsored by ActiveCampaign, who not only is the tool of choice for us, but today they announced a $100 million Series B. Congrats to Jason and the ActiveCampaign team. We talk about a little bit in the show. Truly a story about a startup that I would like to see more of, more things like this. Not necessarily that it took 12 years to grow the company, slow burn, slow blah, blah, blah. But more about the fact that they are revenue producing and they've raised money in a responsible way, and what they're going to be able to do with $100 million to go along with the $90 they already run a year in revenue is amazing. I can't wait to see what goes on with that. So I'll give you the rest of the library because you should take advantage of this like we do. Go beyond email marketing with True Automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. Trust me, if you do it, you'll see why they just raised $100 million, because they are kicking ass. Today's guest, Fady Hawatama, is the founder and CEO of Clockwork. How do I preface this? So the show kind of goes in a couple different directions, but if I had to put like a thesis on it, I would say people who run businesses, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're the CEO of X company, fundamentals, speaking of ActiveCampaign and how they raise their money, fundamentals is your best differentiator going forward. Building a great brand is expensive, takes time. Building great product, as we know, obviously takes time, but there's so much competition that people make mistakes. And the best opportunity for you to grow your company and not get swallowed up is by having fantastic fundamentals. And oh, by the way, if you do, it will only make the acquisition easier or make you easier to acquire other companies. Bottom line is, cash flow is everything. And I think a lot of companies sort of get stuck in this, like, what's our P&L? What's our EBITDA? What's this? What's that? How much have you raised? What's our burn? I want to know what real projections I should expect and assumptions I can see for the next 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 5 years. And Clockwork does that. And Fady and I had a great conversation about that entire piece. So that is what we have coming up next. So the conversation that has taken place in my house, it'll feel like at this point every day. My wife will never listen to this podcast, so I can say this. It is always about, like, we're looking to buy a house, and she's like on the dealing with the expenses of the child, and she'll deal with that, and I'm going to be on the mortgage, and I'm going to be paying most of that sort of thing. And so to me, like, cash flow is a big deal. Mm-hmm. I just kind of know what I make, or like have, you know, I run my own company. So like I kind of have insight into like what I should expect to be coming in. I know what I spend my money on. I'm pretty much a creature of habits. So like there's very little surprise. My wife, on the other hand, less so. It could be a late couple glasses of wine, Amazon Target cruise that just ends up with like boxes sitting outside the front door. It could be, you know, stuff for the kid. Like I don't even know what, like, she has no idea. And I'm like, so how much money do you make a month or clear it? And it's like, well, I'm like, no. What is coming in? I don't need to know the end result. I need to know like what it could have been. And I think this is, cause she's smart and like, and does, you know, saved a lot of money on her own. Like I think this is a regular problem that just people have, like people, especially now in subscription land where everybody's on a hook of something. It's impossible to know how much money you're making or bringing in or not making, or like what, like I think you think in your head you're spending a ton of money and then you're like, you are or you're not or whatever. And there really aren't that many good, definitely for consumers, products out there, services out there that enable us to sort of have projections and cash flow, because you're treating your personal life like a business, essentially. This is what you're doing, essentially, right? Like you're coming in and building software that's an AI sort of driven solution or platform that can do projections for our money, for cash flow. Like, is that?
Yeah, for businesses, you know, that lack of knowledge and experience with managing your cash flow, managing your projections as a person, definitely bleeds into the businesses that and start.
Well, I'm thinking about like, so are you targeting entrepreneurial businesses? Or are you targeting gigantic businesses, you know, or anywhere
for
in between?
The real sweet spot for us is 10 to 100 employees.
Okay, yeah.
Because if you're below 10 employees, you probably don't care about your finances, and you don't take them serious enough, and your company's probably, you know, kind of just trying to figure
out
really where it's going. And then if you're above 100 employees, it's not like our software isn't good for you. It's just, you know, your finances.
You probably have a CFO.
They're pretty elaborate.
So walk me through working with your company, because I feel like one of the things that running businesses with startups in particular, the projection component of this is always the like the bullshit one.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's always the one we're like, well, we met with 20 companies, we're going to close 10. And then it's gonna be a million, but it's really 100,000.
Yeah.
And like in like the investors are looking at one thing and everyone's got a different line.
Absolutely.
So walk me through, I want to walk through like how Clockwork works in general, like the premise behind it.
Yeah.
And then I'd like to know more on like on a granular level, like the tools, why pick projection and cash flow is such an important component of this.
Yeah. So I mean it all starts, Clockwork's been something I've been working on for the better part of 5-6 years now.
Yep.
So I used to run my own outsourced CFO shop. And the one thing that I was doing for every single one of my clients was building them financial projections, financial model, and cash flow forecast. Because the second I start talking to them, and we're talking to startups and high growth companies.
Yeah.
The second I start talking to them, and I'm like, you know, where are you going to be in a month? Where are you going to be in a year? What does your 5-year look like? I have no idea.
Yeah.
And if they have an idea, it's completely bullshit.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, what are the assumptions behind that? And they're like, well, you know, we're going to go in hockey stick, and we're going to be the next Uber of blah, 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 blah. It's like, it's
we're talking to the same people, my friend.
I know. Yeah. Same small world.
Yeah. Everyone's full of shit. I mean, everyone's got a great idea.
And so, you know, really, really taking that, because doesn't matter what business you're in, you have to manage your cash flow. You have to manage your finances. And so what I was doing for all my clients, I knew that there was a better way to do it, because I'm sitting there in an Excel sheet updating financials at the end of every month and going through, you know, the numbers. And I'm like, why am I charging my clients several hundred dollars an hour to sit here in Excel and Google Sheets when this could be automated?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I looked out in the market and the tools out there sucked.
Yeah.
And, you know,
this is true. I mean, well, this is sort of one of the problems that I've had with like CRMs. This is doesn't make sense, but it will.
Yeah.
They have a lot of them now are starting to build in like this show. Like we're partnered with ActiveCampaign. I love ActiveCampaign. Mm-hmm. They have a prediction tool on the Deals app that's sort of like, here's the predictability of success.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to have that be accurate in any way, you know, like a multitude of things have to happen. One, you have to have enough executed deals that ran the full cycle that it can tell you, like, based on probability.
Yeah.
You also have to have this really key piece. The people update it factually.
Yeah.
Like,
to be updated in some real-time fashion.
And with real numbers.
Correct.
Otherwise, like, it's all just a waste of time. And I think projections is one of those things where I don't want to go off on, like, a soapbox in this, but there's, like, the fake it till you make it thing.
Yeah.
In the early stage companies, I think is really detrimental. I think it's one thing to be like, fake it till you make it, in the sense that like the product will do X, which is also dangerous, slippery slope. But like conceptually, it's not built yet. So like we have to work on something.
Mm-hmm.
Projections, I think you're just doing yourself a disservice, because the more you're like, oh, here's 50 companies and this is what it's worth, it's like, well, yeah, but you're going to come woefully short of that.
Yeah, and
the more you don't talk about it, the more you're going to come short and be like, oh, shit.
I mean, there's a reason why you look at Boeing, you look at all these massive, massive companies in this world, their stock tanks if they miss forecast numbers by, you know, 0.5% or something like that, or 0.5 cent. And, you know, that goes to show you the diligence that they go. I used to work for Boeing. So, you know, we literally were building these billion-dollar financial models on Excel. And so you have companies like that being run from Excel. And, I mean, we're updating and rolling up things from 20 different departments and, you know, 40 different people. And then it just kind of spiders all the way through. And imagine, you know, if it's that hectic for a company like Boeing, you know, one of the biggest aerospace company in the world, your tiny little, you know, the next Uber for blah, 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 the next Airbnb of blah, 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 it's nowhere near the diligence that it needs to be.
Gives you a lot of perspective and respect for the publicly traded companies.
Oh, yeah.
I think people don't quite realize when you come in, you're like, we gave guidance.
Yeah.
It's going to be X percent. And like,
exactly.
Then you miss it by like a fraction and your stock goes down, you know, $10 billion market cap.
Yeah,
and you're like, what?
Yeah.
Like, this is 3 months these people have been working on this from every, I mean, there's tens of thousands of employees.
Yeah, and startups, the problem, it's kind of a systemic issue, because everyone's like, haha, yeah, projections. It's like, No, not haha, yeah, projections. When you have that haha, yeah, projections mentality, you're probably not getting funded.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to be closing those deals. Your close rate's going to be shit.
Yep.
So you're not really doing anything. So if you have that haha mentality, say goodbye to your company because you're not going anywhere.
I totally agree with you on this. So walk through. So you're sitting here at Boeing and you're working through this and you're like, there's got to be a better way to do this.
Yeah.
You're picking a couple of things that are the most important because you can automate or power with AI just about anything.
Yeah.
Why are you picking the... Because it's interesting the way that I'm looking for you to frame this, because when we talk to companies from an investment standpoint, one of the questions that is always bringing is like, what's your ARR?
Mm-hmm.
How much money are you bringing in? What's your expenses? Da, da, da. Cash flow is one of the things that, for whatever reason, is not normally a part of the conversation, or at least in the founders that I talk to, that's not something that they're like, oh, schooled in.
Yeah.
And it's like, cash flow is really everything. Yep. Like, the week to week, month to month is like your whole life.
Yep.
So if you don't know what your cash flow is, like,
yeah,
you're like, if anything goes wrong,
oh, you're done.
Yeah, you're done.
I mean, when you know, companies love to talk about their burn. We're burning this. But
I would not want to talk about my burn. I would like to say I'm not burning shit, man.
Well, I mean, the problem is, I mean, look at Uber. They went, and you know, I hate to keep picking on Uber, but you know, they IPO'd.
We'll get a sponsorship from Lyft out of it. It's fine.
Yeah, there you go. They IPO'd with a prospectus, and Lyft's not any better on this front, anyways.
No,
they IPO'd with a prospectus that said we will probably never be profitable, and people are still buying their stock. They're still trading their stock, and that mentality.
I bought stock.
Yeah, and so that mentality is flowing all the way through, where people are like, "We're not going to be profitable." Where, you know, I'm a mentor at Matter Incubator here in Chicago, and you know, I'll sit down with these companies, and I'm supposed to give them CFO guidance, and I'm like, "All right, you know, what's the plan to profitability? What are we doing here?" They're like, "Well, we're never going to be profitable." And I'm like, "Why do you think that?" And they're like, "Well, we're going to get bought by X company." And I'm like, "That's not how you're supposed to set the framework of your company."
Yeah.
If you set your company up to never be profitable, you're never going to be successful.
Yeah.
And so nowadays, unfortunately, I mean, look at Adam Neumann with WeWork.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an absolute train wreck. And you know, they were growth at all costs. And so now you have the biggest VC, arguably the biggest VC in the world, in SoftBank, double guessing how they're actually investing. And it's causing literally aftershocks.
That, like, Miyoshi-san, I would love to know.
Yeah.
Like, what did Adam have on him?
Yeah, right.
Because, like, the things that they've, it's just like, none of the decisions make any sense, even if WeWork were to somehow pull off the bullshit that they said.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
How do you get your money back?
Yeah.
Like, I still don't know.
That's the hype valuation. That's that hype thing that's really taken over this entire space over the last several years, where now everyone's like, are you a sexy product? Then, you know, I'm not interested. If you're not a sexy thing that can catch on fire, I mean, there's a company here in Chicago, I'm not gonna name them, you know, but they're on a tear. They're losing a ton of money every month.
Yep.
And they're on a tear, and they're raising this valuation, raising at a valuation that's absolutely absurd. It's not a tech company. It's, you know, there's no true tech component. And I'm like, how is this normal? Now they're valued too high to be bought. No one's going to buy them.
God, I feel like I know this company.
I'm sure you do. But, you know, they're valued too high to be bought. And they price themselves. Now they have to see where it goes.
Yeah.
And it could be a bubble that pops, or it could be a bubble that just keeps going. But what are we seeing from everything that's coming into the market?
I really know who this is now.
Yeah.
We'll talk offline on that. I agree with you. I actually just read an article recently about, literally this morning. It was in the Wall Street Journal. I think it was just an opinion piece, so take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
But it was about sort of like the tide has turned a little bit in the viewpoint of people being like into this hyper growth, hyper bullshit companies and looking to companies that actually make revenue. And fortunately in Chicago, like, we do have some of the BS ones like anywhere, but we actually do have a lot of the good ones. We shout out before, and this is about ActiveCampaign just today announced their $100 million Series B. And I can tell you from knowing the company, knowing Jason, he's been on the show, you know, they raised, the last time they raised was in 2015. Prior to that, they didn't. He bootstrapped for like 12 years.
Yeah.
And they're at $90 million in revenue this year.
Wow.
Like, they're raising $100 million. They're raising... it's basically a park in their bank for growth.
Oh, yeah.
They've opened all the, like, every office that they've opened with cash.
Yeah.
And you look at the IPO from Sprout Social, another company that raised previously, I think their total amount raised from beginning to IPO was like $110 million.
Yeah.
They're doing about $100 million in revenue this year.
Mm-hmm.
Another company that's operating almost dollar-to-dollar raise versus revenue, which is like, that's not necessarily like, that. You're not trying to get dollar-to-dollar. That's not, there's so many variables that doesn't really mean anything. But it does mean to me that like you're not raising irresponsibly and that everyone on your cap table is probably looking pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And that's like a clean, I mean, I can tell you from being in this myself, like companies that are flying like through massive turbulence all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, kudos if you can do it, but I just think that's like, it's complete luck that you make it through that. Like, it's just like, it's a miracle.
I mean, listen, the reason.
Unnecessarily so, by the way.
100%. And the reason that I launched Clockwork. The reason that I launched my consulting firm, which, you know, obviously bled into Clockwork, was because of a company that I was super close to here in Chicago when I first moved. So I went from St. Louis to Seattle, then to Chicago. And so when I first came to Chicago, I'm kind of figuring out, I'm, you know, looking at the lay of the land because I was in Seattle. Yeah. I saw that thing and, you know, St. Louis like the back of my hand and came to Chicago. And I'm like, you know, a new city that I can figure out.
Yeah.
And I started really getting close to a company that they had 17 employees. They grossed almost $7 million in 2015. From the looks of it, they were on fire.
Yeah.
Everyone was, they were the darling child of Chicago, and everyone, they were bootstrapped. They had raised maybe a couple hundred thousand dollars, but they were kicking ass. And they hired me to come and look at their books. And they had an outsourced CFO already.
Yeah.
And they hired me and they're like, hey, we think we need to go raise money. We don't know how much money we're burning. We don't know how much we're making. We don't know our margins. We think they're around this percentage, but we don't really know. And now, you know, with 17 employees and we're making $7 million this year, we're supposed to be over $20 million. Their projections for 2016 were over 20, and I'm like, yeah, sure, let me, you know, I'll be happy to jump in and start looking at your stuff. I came in and I took a week long to build their model. I started over four different times building their model because the numbers were so shit that I didn't want to believe it.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I'm super close to this company and I'm like, there's no way these are that bad. And so I would go and re-pull the reports and redo all these and the assumptions and everything. And I literally had to sit these three 25-year-old kids down and tell them that the company they've been building since they were 17, 18 years old, freshman year in college, was done in 3 months if they didn't raise $500,000. And they went out of business. They raised a little bit of money. They limped along. And that 17-person, $7 million company disappeared overnight.
Yeah.
And all the other startups behind it just ran right over it. No one even thinks of it. And then
there's a million companies all chasing. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before. And I mean, this is where the show can get kind of interesting, I think. Not that it wasn't before. but like the world of, and this sounds like old asshole speak.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The world, and this is like even 90s and early 2000s, the world of differentiators being a product or a service or a thing that's unique, that is like you found something that world really doesn't exist anymore. It does in some parts, and there's like technology that you'll develop, but then really quickly afterward, it'll be followed up by a million people.
Yeah.
It is all about brand and fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yep.
Like, can you build a brand people are excited about? Can you deliver what you said you were going to deliver?
Mm-hmm.
And then behind the scenes, you work your ass off to make sure that the math makes sense.
Yep.
And if any of those three things don't happen, you will get flattened and disappeared overnight. The brand, if you're lucky, will be your saving grace. Yep. Someone will buy your brand to pay off the cap table or you or hire your team and give you a life tomorrow.
Yep.
And then they run on by. And that's life. That's the way we are now. So like when I talk to companies, sounds like a confessional. By all means, just jump in.
Yeah.
We've done, you know, clearly talking to a lot of the same people.
Yeah.
Clearly. And I want to, like, this is a fact. If for anyone listening to the show is a founder, like, thinking about being a founder, like, this is, you can message either Fadi or I, right? You can on Twitter, it's just at Katoon. What's your Twitter?
Twitter is just Fadi.
Fadi? Sorry.
Worries. Fadi _ Hawatma.
Okay. So what we've got on this is, I have met with so many companies where I literally have said to them, in my opinion, you're not operating in a way that is scalable.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that certain shit has to go a certain way to get off the ground, to have a launching pad. You've got to meet certain things that maybe are not in the best interest of the long term of the company to be able to be here tomorrow to make the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't build the fundamentals this way and you don't proceed with the way you structure your company this way, you won't make it.
Yeah.
And all of them, with the exception of a very small amount, have basically told me to F off.
Yeah.
And like they don't want me to be on an advisor or whatever because it's like I gave you bad news.
Yep.
Well, in a couple of years, and a couple of them are already gone, so I was right on that. Not that I wanted to be, but like...
Well, I mean, people think being a founder is sexy. They think being an entrepreneur is
sucks.
Sexy. It sucks.
This sucks.
You know, I'm genuinely...
I enjoy the process. But
yeah,
like,
I mean, it's phenomenal, but you're not a made entrepreneur. You're a born entrepreneur. Yeah. And, you know, I've been, my first company I started when I was 12 years old. You know, I ran my dad's restaurant with him throughout my entire life, pretty much since I was old enough to reach over the counter. My dad bought the restaurants when I was 2 years old. So I literally grew up in the restaurants. I know that my family are all entrepreneurs.
That's the Greek side?
That's the Jordanian side.
Really?
Yeah, that's
the Jordanian side. So you're the first ever Jordanian Greek that I've had.
Yeah.
Every Greek in Chicago, I think.
Yeah.
I think literally, we checked all of them.
Yeah,
every Greek is on the show. And it's always like they got the food industry. One of them is in the entertainment app industry.
Yep.
And several other industries. But jokes aside, like... It you're right. It's a is a style in your head, but I do think that like when you take a grinder, so like for me, I don't think I agree with you generally speaking on the born versus raised thing, the nature nurture.
Yeah.
There's certain things that are innate that I had that was like I found out as an entrepreneur because every time I tried to do it the way other people did it, I got thrown out.
Yeah.
Like get the hell 100%. Out of here. But I think you're a grinder. You're a person who sees the gaps differently. It's sort of like a good running back,
mm-hmm.
right? You see the
mm-hmm.
hole different. Yeah. That one hits that hole hard. And the other one just Cedric, rest in peace, Cedric Bensoning around looking for a place to fall down.
Yeah.
I think that if you don't take, so like, how much did I phrase this? If you go into things like with that thought process
mm-hmm.
and then you get a bunch of money flung at you
mm-hmm.
and you start hiring people because you're growing this idea beyond where your brain was.
Yeah.
It's very easy to lose track of fundamentals and just become the talking mouth head thing.
I mean, you know, I always say this to myself and my entire team. Every single person that works with me knows this. I always say facts tell, stories sell.
Yeah.
If you are not a good storyteller, if you are not moving things forward with your story, with the story of your company, which is why Clockwork, I mean, we're newest in the space of forecasting projections. We're blowing by all these other companies because the story behind Clockwork is one that has real teeth to it. You know, I literally saw a close company of mine go out of business because they didn't have any financial visibility.
Yeah.
I literally was raised in a restaurant that I know, my dad was always, Dad, can we buy this? Dad, can I hire this person? Dad. And I kind of, you know, always looked at it, and I'm like, my dad's he has a master's in civil engineering. Yeah. He's just a very analytical person. That's just how he wants to do it. But no, that's literally small business.
Yeah. 10% margins at a restaurant is considered like the holy grail.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, the story, Clockwork's literally been the culmination of my entire life. And I always tell this to everyone. It's literally the culmination of my life experiences, professional experiences. Everything has come to grow into Clockwork. And all these other companies, you know, they'll start and, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, this is a cool idea. Let's go into this. Or this market's big. Let's go into this. And there's no real passion behind it. And if you don't have that passion, you don't have that story, you're not going to go far.
Yeah. So I want to get into the sort of the steps of what you think good fundamentals are.
Yeah.
And then I want you to walk me into, as a founder, could be an operator of a business that's 25 people, doesn't
mm-hmm.
matter.
Mm-hmm.
What are the fundamental pieces that I should be doing before I get in touch with you? And what does it look like to be a client of Clockwork thereafter?
You have to actually care about your growth. I mean, that's always the very beginning thing because, you know, people are always reaching out and they're like, yeah, you're just trying to sell Clockwork. I'm like, no, I want to see if your company is a good fit for Clockwork, not if Clockwork's a good fit for you. Because the companies that are on Clockwork, you need to have a regimented view of how you're taking your growth.
Yep.
You need to understand that it's not just hiring 25 people. I mean, look at you know, I'll pick on Uptake. Uptake, they were, you know, valued at $1 billion within a year. They hired a ton of people, and then they laid off a ton of people because they didn't know. And so, you know, if you're going to be that growth hype, you know, let's just throw a bunch of bodies at this problem and see what happens, that's not a company for Clockwork.
Yeah.
We want companies that are very calculated on their growth. They know that this could hockey stick, and if we have the best odds at hockey sticking, we're gonna actually be very calculated on the people, on the office space, on the equipment we're buying for our team, the tools we're using, the resources we offer them, and having everything other than a ping pong table in your office or a keg.
Just to defend Uptake on this, just because I have to.
Yeah, of course.
And this is actually an interesting sidebar, because this is something about knowing who you are as a company. So Uptake was in a situation where, with Caterpillar, they were together in a potential deal that would be worth a shit ton of money. Yeah. They had to take every resource, and I know this is because I know the guys who are inside of this, they have to take every resource they possibly have to attain completely something that they knew there was a very, not slim, but there was a bigger chance that this wouldn't work than it would, and they went for it, and they hired everyone knowing that if it didn't hit, that they were going to have 100%. To find a whole new market and a whole new thing. So, like, in that company's case, it's like, they weren't irresponsible about it. They knew what they were doing. They were just like,
100%.
But, like, that, you're looking for companies that are, like, they're not chasing after one singular dream where it's going to drop. Like, because I feel like for them and for other companies like that, they're sort of operating, and you see this with, like, repeat founders, particularly those as successful as Brad Keywall, where, to be totally honest, this sounds insane for you and I, but, like, a billion dollar problem is really not big enough for a guy to take that guy's attention. It needs to be like 8 billion.
Yeah.
And so, because of how much success he's had, so like for him, he's going to go after stuff this way. But for the most entrepreneurs,
correct,
you're just trying to stack growth from one thing to the next thing to the next thing.
It's not a feast or famine play.
Correct.
And Brad Keywell, he's a billionaire. And one of my really close friends, he was employee number 3 at Uptake. So I have the most respect for Uptake. I actually almost went and worked with them. But, it's not a feast or famine thing.
On the financial side, you probably would have been safe. You wouldn't have
issues. Yeah, right.
they probably needed more of those.
Yeah. But, you know, and unfortunately, you know, I'm a very risky person, and, you know, I'm a finance and accounting educated guy. And I guess the definition of finance is really finding risk and, being risk aversive, finding risk and avoiding it. I'm the riskiest finance guy you'll meet, because I find risk, but I find a way to avert it by improving that situation, not by just averting it.
Yeah. No, makes a lot of sense. So when you get into the working with you, give me just a little bit of a glimpse into what that looks like.
Yeah. So, you know, Clockwork integrates with QuickBooks Online and Xero. So those are the only real requirements you need to have a Clockwork account.
Yep.
And we're updating your account every hour. So you literally, it takes less than a minute to create your account. You go on, you create your account, and the backend AI will actually build your entire financial model based on your industry, how many employees you have, how much revenue you have, how long you've been around, seasonality, a few other things like that. And it'll actually build you your 5-year projections, your baseline forecast based off of what you've been trending and all those other factors.
Yep.
And it'll build you your 65-week cash flow forecast. So you literally log on to Clockwork and everything's populated for you. Your numbers, your company, your chart of accounts, we're pulling in transactional level details. So we know what runs your company.
Yeah.
So when you create your Clockwork account, there's no template that we're shoving all your stuff into in the back end. It's literally custom built for every company that gets on. And when you get on, you get to play all your what if scenarios. Because one thing that drove me absolutely bonkers when I was running my consulting firm was my clients will always call me and say, hey, what if we went into this market? Or what if we hired this person? Or what if we, you know, raised our prices? Literally a million what ifs. I'll go back and I'll build a model, take a couple hours, send it back to them. They're like, okay, that looks good, but what if we did this, this, this? And I'm like, oh my God. I was like, I wish you told me that at the beginning. So now I go take another few hours.
I hope
hours.
You were doing this on billable hours.
Oh, they're all billable hours.
Like, well, then change. I'll what if my way all the way into the holiday season.
But, you know, I hated it because, you know, you, no one knows your numbers better than your outsourced CFO. So, you know, I hated billing. I would discount the hell out of all my hours because I'm like, this is a $10,000 bill because you kept calling me, you know. But with Clockwork, the business themselves can go into Clockwork and add a new row. What if we did this, this, this? What if we hire this person, pay him $100,000 with 25% benefits and all this kind of stuff? So it gives a lot more control to the business owner.
Yep.
And I hated being called 24/7 by clients, and you know they want their answer right now.
Yeah,
they want their answer immediately. And one, I remember one time I was at, we raised a Series A for one of my clients, and I'm in the board meeting with the Series A. My phone is just blowing up. First, I had it on the table, which I probably shouldn't have, but it starts vibrating like crazy. You know, put it away. It's kept vibrating like crazy. I had my Apple Watch on and it kept blowing up. And I'm like, oh my God, it was with one client. I was like, did someone die? Like, what happened? So I literally.
The whole company.
Yeah. So I literally walked out and I'm like, hey, what's going on? He goes, I need to know what our numbers were last month. I'm like, that's why you blew up my phone for the last hours, because you need to know what you're, and you don't want to log into your QuickBooks Online or your Xero account. I'm like, you are bonkers. And so now with Clockwork, you log in and you see all your numbers. You see everything in real time. And so gone are the days where CPAs, and we're partnering with CPA firms. That's how, you know, that's how we're, that's our go-to-market strategy. We have the Clockwork Champions program where we focus on top 100 regional CPA firms for them to offer Clockwork for their clients.
Yep.
Because one of the craziest things is when I was running my firm, I was stealing clients left and right from accounting firms.
Yeah.
Because you look at accounting, bookkeeping and taxes and all that traditional stuff, those are all commodity nowadays.
Yeah.
And every Tom, Dick, and Harry is a CPA.
Correct.
So all these larger firms, they're scooping up all these younger, smaller firms because they need to add more things to their bottom line. So with Clockwork, I essentially went to all these CPA firms. There was one firm specifically in Chicago that I stole like 10 clients for them in a month. I went to them and I said, hey, I've stole these 10 clients from you. Why don't you guys put me on retainer, offer financial modeling, financial forecasting, and cash flow forecasting as a service, because that's why I was stealing all of them. And I said, offer it. I'll do the work for you, and then you guys can offer it and start charging your customers for it. Literally, yes.
I
batted 1,000 on every single one of those deals. And so now with Clockwork, I'm just going back to these firms and saying, hey, how about a software that does it for you, that standardizes the entire process for you?
Because most of them don't. I mean, they make their money on billable hours also.
Correct.
And they really don't want, they think they have to work with the smaller companies, but they don't want to.
Yeah. Like, well, I, you know, it's they make their money on billable hours, but CPAs want to do what's best for the company.
Well, yeah, but the smaller companies, to the point you were bringing before, they ask for a lot of extra shit because they don't know any better.
Yeah, they don't know anything. Yeah.
And they're not like, and they're just like, they don't like, it's the funniest thing. It's a rule that I think anyone who's been in business of sales or anything knows. The higher the amount of money that you get paid, the less bullshit you usually have to answer to.
Yeah.
Like the lower the price, the more questions, the more accountability I needed.
Yep.
And that's just the way it is working with small businesses. Mm-hmm. And that it's not my favorite thing, to be totally honest. But a lot of this is the same with law firms. Like the law firms, accountancies, they're all buying up all the small shops to get the startups and the small companies in because they're high growth potential.
Yeah, yep.
But in actuality, they can't stand serving because those guys can't pay the bill once they bill up all the hours for all the bullshit.
It's all the bullshit. And that's the most important thing. We have CPA firms that are literally saving 5 hours a month per client for not having to deal with Excel and updating the financials and all that kind of stuff. So then it changes the paradigm where now CPAs are serving as an advisor to these small businesses because they walk them through their Clockwork account and they're like, hey, these are what these numbers mean. This is what we're going to be next year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. And they become irreplaceable. CPAs become irreplaceable.
Makes sense. Where do people go to learn more about Clockwork?
Clockwork.ai.
Very cool. One more time, give people the Twitter or wherever, DM on Instagram, whatever your handle is.
Yeah, so clockwork.ai on Instagram, clockwork_AI on Twitter. Myself is just my full name, Fady Huwama on Instagram, Fady_Huwama on Twitter.
Very cool. Awesome. Thanks, Fady.
Awesome. Thank you.
If you've got any questions for Fady or for me, DM me on Instagram or Twitter at Technori or at Katoon to apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase live on WGN Radio. Go to technori.com. Boom. That's a wrap.